south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
Now, you may recall in a past show, I mentioned that certain gringos and expats come down here and get into trouble, sometimes through no fault of their own. For example, if you drive a car down here, you're eventually going to get into an accident. You're probably 3 or 4 times as likely to get in an accident down here than you are up in the States, because Latins are just such terrible drivers. In fact, did you know that when you go to driver's school down here, and only about 5% of people do, they guarantee you a license? And in most Latin countries, after you've completed driver's school, you take the test in a simulator, not even a real car. And by the way, I know at least a dozen Latin drivers who do not know how to parallel park a car. They never learned, and they never will. So they won't even try it. They'll just keep driving around till they find a parking spot they can drive right into. Add that to the fact that 95% of Latins do not carry car insurance. And it seems that the only Latins who ever do buy car insurance are ones that are forced into it when they buy a car on the payment plan. Which means that virtually all new cars down here in Latin America, and cars up to even 8 years old, just might be covered. And why do I mention 8 years as a time frame for possibly carrying insurance? That's because dealerships down here these days are giving financing for up to 8 years. Can you believe that? Now, up in the States, after a car is about 8 years old, sometimes they're still in pretty good shape. But down here in Latin America, they're almost all battered and tattered pieces of junk by then. Unless, of course, the car belongs to a gringo or a European or some little old lady. That's always a scenario in any country. In fact, I've been in cars with gringos and expats where one has turned to me and said, "Hey, Johnny, look at that car next to us. I can't believe it. It's 8 or 10 years old and it looks like new." So why does a thing like that rate a comment? Because it's so rare down here. Now, in Europe and in the States, a thing like that never gets commented on because it's not that rare. That means, down here, there's always a chance to find that little old guy or little old lady who rarely takes the car out and leaves it in the garage all the time. So, although most cars 10 or 15 years old down here are pieces of junk, there are those rare exceptions to the rule. Now, let me warn you again about buying a car down here in Latin America, specifically Central America, where a lot of cars are coming in from the U.S. Now, these cars can be perfectly nice looking, after they've been extensively repaired down here, of course. And a lot of them are light new, too. But remember, almost every one of them that comes down from the States has been a total wreck and bought at auction online from auction houses just north of the border, most of them in Texas. Some of these auction companies even have their ads in Spanish because they know just how big a business it is. So there are Latin guys and Latin repair shops down here that make it their exclusive business to bring these wrecked cars down and fix them. In fact, you can get online and see these wrecked vehicles and how people bid on them, etc. yourself. And there's a steady stream of trucks and drivers that'll haul these things down to a repair shop in Salvador, Honduras, Guatemala, Belize, wherever. Now, the biggest cost for most of these repair jobs are the replacement parts, which sometimes could run into a couple of grand, and the labor's so cheap down here, from $15 to $20 a day for a really good mechanic or body man, so it's well worth their while to do it. That's why down here you can always find a nice-looking high-end car like an Audi or a BMW, a late-model car for maybe $10,000 or $12,000, with a blue book up in the States for maybe $15 to $20,000. But the thing is, nearly all of these cars come down as wrecks. And worst, some of them have been in floods, and so the water has seeped into various compartments of the car. Of course, you'll never know that. And I've heard people say, "Hey, but Johnny, so what? You dried a car out, maybe you put new upholstery in, maybe changed the seats, and it's like new again." Well, I got news for you. No matter how nice it looks cosmetically, remember, if water rose up to the rocker panels and beyond, buried in all those panels and under the carpets are many complicated wiring harnesses with virtually miles of electric wires and connectors going to the lights, the brakes, the sensors, you name it. And if those things have been sitting underwater for any period of time, it doesn't really matter if everything seems to be working now. In the future, you're going to have problems. So then when you're down in Latin America, how do you know if a used car is coming from the States or not? Because, you know, once an insurance company considers a car a complete wreck, it can be retitled in another country with brand new paperwork. Especially down here in Latin America, where as far as paperwork, anything goes. Anyway, it's a dead giveaway once you sit in the driver's seat and you see that the speedometer and odometer are not in kilometers, but in miles. Because all Latin American countries except Belize use kilometers instead of miles. So that's your first dead giveaway. Second dead giveaway is to look at the back of the car where there's usually a sticker or a chrome insignia saying Jack's Bellevue Motors, Highland Park, Illinois, or whatever name or logo that came from that original dealership. Funny enough, when these wrecked and totaled cars get down here to Central America, instead of removing that telltale sign that it came from the U.S., most of the time, the repair guys or body men will just leave it there as a sign of distinction, I guess, that it originated from the U.S. I guess it's probably like Latins loving to wear T-shirts with English sayings on them they don't understand. Who knows? And thirdly, there's another surefire way to figure out if that car's been totaled up in the States and brought down. You just copy down the VIN number, that's Vehicle Identification Number. You'll find that on the engine block, as well as a plate attached to the firewall, in the engine compartment, on top of the dashboard, and on the inside door nameplate, amongst other places. They should all match, by the way. If they don't, then you've really got a hack job, because they're mixing and matching vital parts. Anyway, you get that VIN number, you go on the internet, and there are some sites you can go to, plug that VIN number, it'll tell you the history of that car, where it was bought, the parties who owned it and such, and if it was wrecked, totaled, or scrapped. Oh, and by the way, I'd say about one in every three cars in Central America is one of those cars brought in from the States. So look out. And I recommend you don't purchase one of those unless it's so ridiculously cheap and seems to run well and you're just using it for your kid or as a second beater. The fact is, on those internet sites like OXL.com and in the classified newspapers all throughout Latin America, every day you'll see ads for dozens, even hundreds of cars in the $1,000 to $5,000 range. Most of them beaters in that range, but some aren't. And I'd say about half of these cars are ones that were previous wrecks in the States, and they're still chugging along. So by all means, if you find a cheap one and you're going to use it as a beater, for example, like I said, for your kid, or if you have a business and one of your employees has got to run around making pickups, doing errands, etc., you don't want to have anything nice. It's certain your Latin employees will run these things into the ground. I mean, this is the third world, you know. Now, remember, all those U.S. trashed and wrecked cars end up in Central America and not South America. Why? Because they're easily bought at auction on the internet and driven through Mexico down to all the other countries in Central America. That would be Panama, Costa Rica, Nicaragua, Guatemala, Salvador, Belize, and Honduras. So then how do they get them from the States down to Central America? They either fix them up just enough in the States so that they can be driven down. Or more likely, it's not the case that they're drivable, so they just stack about 5 or 10 of them on one of those big flatbed trucks and drive them down through. Then, of course, all that labor and time-consuming stuff is done down in Latin America where people get paid 15 to 20 bucks a day, as opposed to 15 or 20 bucks an hour up in the States. So as you can see, it's a very workable proposition for people in that business. Again, we're talking about Central America here. You don't find those U.S. origin cars in South America. Why? You can't drive them down past Panama. There's that huge Darien swamp that's about as big as the state of Maine. No one can get through there. There's no road. Which is why when you're in South America, almost all the cars are bought from dealers down there. Of course, occasionally a car will get shipped down from the States. For example, if someone's a pensioner, you know, in the residency program in a place like Colombia, because as a pensioner, you can have a car shipped down about every 5 years, I think, without having to pay import taxes, which are very heavy indeed, sometimes up to 50% of the Blue Book value of your car. So you just pay the shipping fee, which can be heavy too, anywhere from $2,000 to $4,000, because we're talking about South America here now, which might be worth it to you if you have a late model car that's worth a lot of dough up in the States. But that's just generally not the case. When you're in a place like Argentina or Colombia, whatever, in South America, you just don't see cars with a sticker on it that says Jerry's Ford, Highland Park, Michigan. You just don't see that. So in fact, in Central America, it's a buyer's market. And I'm talking for used cars. There are so many of those cars flooding in that it has, in the long run, forced down the prices of used cars. Whereas in South America, cars are always a third to a half, even double the price of cars in Central America. There definitely is not an oversupply of used cars. There's no buyer's market like in Central America. A while ago, if you remember, I did a show talking about the extremely high prices of cars in Brazil, Argentina, Chile, etc. And for all you gringos and expats living in South America, you know that already. It's one of the big negatives to moving to South America, too. I mean, come on, tell me you're not going to blow a gasket when you go to the Toyota dealer in Buenos Aires and see a Toyota Hilux pickup is 65 grand, and on the internet in the States or in Central American dealerships, it's half that. Even less. I tell you, it's gotta hurt. Anyway, like I was saying at the beginning of the program today, gringos and expats here in Latin America who drive are eventually going to get in a car accident. What with the terrible drivers, the constant tailgating, the running of red lights, the badly marked or even unmarked road hazards, people passing on blind corners and curves, badly lit or unlit roads at night, and gigantic potholes popping out of nowhere, people without headlights or taillights, even both. That's not a fluke. You see that every single night you drive. And that's a very incomplete list, by the way. If you drive, you're going to eventually get into an accident or even a wipeout. So what do you do when that happens? Well, of course, you stop, especially if your car has been trashed. You immediately call your insurance company, and for some unexplained reason, they almost always show up within 10 minutes. In fact, some of them pride themselves in that. That's part of their advertising campaign. You gotta love that, especially in the third world when they promise something and actually deliver. So they're actually as good, if not better, than many first world insurance companies, believe it or not. So the question is, how can that be? Well, that's because they're only insuring 5% of the population, and those are always people with money and nice late model cars. And the fact that in just the last 5 years or so, there's been an explosion in the number of insurance companies vying for your business. Competition, 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 and everybody's got to do a little bit better than the next guy or word gets out, and well, you know what happens then. So then you might ask, why so many insurance companies now? Well, that's because car dealers and banks are starting to give low and no interest loans, something that's completely new in Latin America. And besides, now you can get 4, 5, 6, even 8 year car loans, whereas not so long ago, you could only take out a loan for 2 or 3 years. So half the people getting new cars today could not have qualified for a loan just 3 or 4 years ago. Now, note the huge irony here. Throughout Latin America, every country states you must carry car insurance. To which gringos always say, well then, why do only 5% of drivers have insurance? What about that 95%? They're all breaking the law, right? To which I say, yes, they are, and nobody's checking and no one gives a damn. But do note, when a person doesn't carry car insurance, he's usually driving a piece of crap. Meaning, a year's worth of insurance premiums could be worth more than his car. Now, note that most car accidents involve a bumper collision or a fender bender. Nothing major. With only 1 in maybe 20 car accidents being severe where someone gets hurt and goes to the hospital or the car is wiped out or can't be driven away. And that's why probably a good 60 to 70% of car fender benders are resolved right on the spot with a little cash. And that's, of course, because bodywork is so damn cheap down here. In fact, the last 2 fender benders I was in, where my fender and door were creased and dented, looked pretty nasty. Neither one of those repair jobs cost me more than $200. And I know if it had happened in the States, I'd be looking at least $1,000. So, like I said, most fender benders are resolved right there, paying out on the spot, and people don't even call their insurance company, not if it's a small or even medium-sized crease. You kind of discuss it there with the other guy before you call anyone. Remember I said that they have mandatory insurance laws down here? Well, believe it or not, that's in your favor, because even if you're carrying just liability insurance and some guy hits you or you hit some guy that doesn't have insurance at all, he will, even if it's your fault, try to pay out right there because he knows if you call the cops in on the deal or the insurance company, the fact that he's not carrying insurance puts most of the burden on him. If you or your insurance company presses the issue, he'll get hit with a big fine. Well, to him, it'll be big, maybe $100. And down here in Latin America, liability coverage, which I recommend you carry unless you have a new or very late model car, then you won't feel good unless you have full coverage. I mean, it's an American thing, this insurance coverage obsession we have. We've grown up with it. Now, sometimes I suggest for new, fresh gringos and expats that if you have a car, even if it's an older one, get full coverage for the first year. In fact, just the other day, I gave that very advice to an expat who just bought his first car down here. Seems like we don't feel good unless we're overinsured, and Latins feel mostly it's a waste of money to have insurance. So when in doubt, gringos should carry full coverage for the first year anyway, and after that year's over and they see how things work down here, then, like most gringos do, they drop the full coverage and go strictly to liability, that's third party, which will run you $150 to $250 a year. So if you get in an accident with someone who doesn't have insurance, and that's more than likely, chances are he'll try to settle up with you right there, but being that he's got a beater and probably doesn't have 10 bucks in his pocket, he'll promise you the world because he doesn't want the cops or the insurance company involved, but you can't get blood out of a stone, so that's where your lawyer comes in. Do let your lawyer do the haggling. And other times you just know the guy couldn't scrape together 200 bucks even if you took him to court. And by the way, by the time you're hashing all that out and your lawyer gets down there, the cops will have surely arrived. And by then you feel like hitting the guy with no insurance over the head with a selfie stick, because it's not only a huge waste of your time as you're standing there with your lawyer, you're going to have to pay for your own car's damages. Even if it only costs you 75 or 100 or 150 bucks, there's nothing just about the whole scenario. Which is, again, why I always say don't drive a new or late model car. Because if you have a nice car, you'll be in a catch-22 when the next junker hits you. And if you think you're immune from that because you're a great driver up in the States, I was too. Two accidents in 15 years when I was in the States. Down here, three in 1 year. All with junkers. And in another year, I got hit by two taxis, and neither one of them had insurance. Anyway, like I said, sooner or later, the cops will arrive. They won't necessarily get involved at all like they will in the States. They'll help you get your cars out of the way of the mainline traffic, you know, off to the side of the road. But get this. If you say to the cop, look, I'm going to try to work it out with this guy, they'll just leave you alone. They won't write tickets or screw around with you at all. So what the cops will generally do is give you a chance to settle up with the guy on your own. Because they know it's just a big time-wasting paperwork jungle to write accident reports up and file them. Which is why you let your lawyer do the dealing right there. Of course, if it's a big smack-up or somebody's hurt, you have to get the insurance company involved, etc. Oh, and by the way, if you call your insurance company guy and he arrives, they're well aware of how the paperwork jungle works down here too. And they'll give you a chance to settle up with the other guy, hoping you can settle it without getting them involved too. So down here in Latin America, at least, when it's just a little fender bender, the cops and the insurance company are quite pragmatic about the whole thing. And remember, down here in Latin America, there isn't even a point system. So if the cops did write tickets, it doesn't matter. There's no point system. You don't get docked for anything. And your insurance rates don't go up. By the way, for fresh, new gringos and expats, that is surprising news that there's no point system on your license. Even better, if you get into a crash or two or three or four, your insurance company does not raise your rates. How about that? Nor will they refuse to insure you the next year or drop you. At least I've never heard of that happening. And believe me, a lot of wealthy Latin guys I know like to drink, and they really smash their cars up sometimes, and still, they're carrying the same coverage and paying no more. Again, it's one of those strange quirks you find only down here in Latin America. But, of course, I'm generalizing here for all Latin American countries now. Things do vary a little bit from country to country, but not much. And things often vary a great deal whether you're on or off the gringo tourist trail, too. Off the tourist trail, the cops are normally quite laid back and cool. On the tourist trail, they know gringos have money, so they're out for a buck. Now, here's something that often shocks gringos and expats when they first hear it. I mentioned this before a long, long time ago, but now I have a boots-on-the-ground actual example. Now, you know, down here in Latin America, there are lots and lots of cars. Every big city has its share of really hefty traffic jams. So where'd all those cars come from? Well, it's not exactly where did all those cars come from. It's that the road and highway systems in Latin America are vastly under-designed. So wherever there's a two-lane highway, there should be four. Wherever there's a four-lane highway, there should be eight, etc. So watch out. There are many, many seemingly nice two-lane roads in Latin America that, without warning, turn to one lane or one dirt lane. And I can tell you there are many, many roads that are so nice and so smooth and so new that you become overconfident, then you exceed the speed limit, and suddenly you're coming up to a bridge, for example, and you realize to your horror that the bridge does not match the highway. You're on a two-lane highway and it's a one-lane bridge. There's only room for one car to pass at a time. I'm not kidding you. There are many, many thousands of bridges like that. And, of course, untold accidents at said bridges, especially at night. Now, of course, if you're driving in the daytime, you'll figure out where these bridges are and you'll make note of it. But at night, especially if you haven't been on that road before, well, let's just say that's why you should never be driving at night unless you know the area quite well. And still, there could be any number of surprises. Like, for example, groups of pedestrians running across the road at any time, any place. And as opposed to up in the first world, where cars outnumber pedestrians, there are in fact more cars in the USA than there are people. Down here in Latin America, it's more like four people to every one car. So with four times as many pedestrians, you have four times as much chance of hitting one of them. Yep, something about chickens and pedestrians. They're always trying to cross the road, but somehow the chickens never get hit. And be especially careful on weekends when the average Latin guy who doesn't have a car is walking to and from the cantinas, because by midnight, a lot of these guys are pretty tanked up. And they do wander. That's especially true in the small towns and out in the boonies. Which brings me to the story of the day. Turns out an expat gringo and his wife, who came down about a year and a half ago, had an incident last weekend. Now, this gringo expat couple lives about 7 or 8 miles outside a fairly big city, and there are a lot of small towns connected in between by small, winding, two-lane, mostly unlit, rural highways. So as you're coming out of the big city, you go through a stretch of boonies for about 3 or 4 miles, then you hit a rather small town of 2 or 3,000. And if you keep traveling down that winding road for another 4, 5, 6 miles, you'll hit another tiny town of 1,000 or 2 or 3,000. That's the general setup here. So about a week ago, it's 9:30 on a Saturday night, my gringo friend, who lives about 7 or 8 miles out of the big city, he pulled into his gated community, then into his garage, and yelled for his wife to come out. He was frantically pointing at a big dent in the car, saying he just hit somebody. So while his wife and the cleaning lady were looking at the car, he was calling his lawyer. The lawyer said, "Did you see who you hit? Were there any witnesses?" And my friend said, "No, it was foggy, worse than soup." And by the way, if you live in the area I prefer to live in, the Altiplano, a dozen times a year during the rainy season, which is right now, it really is kind of a cloud forest, and you get that fog so thick you can't even see your hand sometimes. In that case, you have to drive about 5 miles an hour or look for a car that you can follow because you just can't see a thing. Now, in the city, it's different. When that kind of fog rolls in, there's lots of light, street lights, cars, etc., and you can see. But just a few miles out, when you get to the boonies, the highways are vastly underlit and you're on your own. Anyway, this gringo buddy of mine admits he likes to go fast and he was chugging along about 25 and boom, he hit somebody. So now he's all panicky and he's calling his lawyer. And the first thing his lawyer said, by the way, this won't go down very well with a lot of you gunnabies and wannabes, he says, "You did the right thing. You gotta get the hell out if you hit somebody." Now, I know this is contrary to everything people have learned up in the first world, but down here, even though you're never supposed to leave the scene when you hit a person, most lawyers off the record will tell you to get the hell out. And why is that? Well, they don't go by British common law, except in Belize, as is done with the legal system up in the States. The rest of the 19 Latin American countries go by what's called Napoleonic law, where in bodily harm cases, you're guilty until proven innocent. In other words, if you hit somebody down here and they get hurt or end up in the hospital or killed, you go to jail, at least for a day or so till your lawyer can get you out, and they take your car. So your lawyer can easily get you out of that fix in a day or so. Unless, of course, the guy's dead. But he's not going to be able to get your car. Sometimes they end up in a police impoundment for months and you get it back without the battery and the spare tire and the jack, etc. You've heard me tell that story before. Anyway, this gringo friend of mine's car has a nice big bloody dent in the front of it. In that moment, he's worried about two things. Getting caught and getting the thing fixed without raising suspicion. Well, his lawyer said, "Don't worry, every car down here has its dents. Getting it fixed? No problem. Except this gringo has seen way too many CSI shows. You know, where they trace the DNA off a microscopic hair on the bumper, etc. Well, the truth is there's about a 20-year lag time before that kind of technology ever gets down here. Anyway, after the lawyer calmed him down, my friend and his wife glued themselves in front of the TV news for the next 2 days, but nothing. Nothing in the local papers either, which is normal, his lawyer told him, because when people get hit, even killed down here as pedestrians, it just happens so often that it's not news. So anyway, a week went by and things calmed down, and suddenly my gringo buddy called me yesterday. That's when he told me the whole drawn-out story. So was there a happy ending? Well, yes and no. Yesterday, my friend said, a cop car pulled up to his guarded, gated community and wanted to see him. They didn't even know his name. They just wanted to know where the gringo lived. So the guard called my friend through the internal intercom system and said, there's a cop here. He wants to talk to you. And my friend freaked out as he instantly called his lawyer. And the lawyer said, if he accuses you of anything, deny, 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 and put me on the phone with him. So the doorbell rings and standing at the front door is a cop and a guy with a big-ass cowboy hat sitting on a horse. Turns out, the cop explained, about a week ago, somebody drove his car into one of this guy's cows and killed it. And instantly, my friend went into the stupid gringo no habla español thing and handed the phone to the cop and the lawyer and he had a discussion for a minute or two. Then the cop excused himself and he and the Latin John Wayne rode into the sunset. Then, with the lawyer still on the phone, he told my friend, look, they don't know what kind of car hit the cow and they don't even know your name. Which means someone close to you must have said something. Who'd you tell? He said, just my wife and I. We told no one else. And then his wife chimed in and said, the cleaning lady, remember? She knows no English, but she was in the driveway when you showed me the bloody dent. Then the lawyer said, that's it. By now, every maid and gardener in the whole area knows about the gringo that plowed into a cow. Then, later that day, the lawyer called back and said, not to worry. It would take about $600 to make the whole thing go away. And true, the lawyer told my buddy if he'd had full coverage on the car, the insurance would have paid that $600. But my friend didn't care one bit. He was just so happy he didn't kill a real person that he said he'd have paid $6,000 to make it go away. Then he paused for a second and said to the lawyer, just one thing. When I pay the $600, do I get to keep the stakes?
South of the border, down Mexico way.
You've been listening to the Expat Files, living in Latin America, coming to you twice a week from somewhere south of the border. Email me, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And don't forget to check out expatwisdom.com to sign up for your free reports on Latin America. See you next time. Nos vemos. She was a picture in old